Welcome to the Donna Sebo Show. Donna is an international mental practitioner, award-winning author, counselor, speaker, teacher, and radio TV personality. Dedicated to empowering others through her mental skills, she also features authors and experts from all over the world to share their knowledge and experience with you, the listening audience. Now, let's join Donna and her guests. Here's Donna.
Hello, and welcome to an hour of mind power. Ah, that magic, magic day is coming closer and closer. What day is that? It's Halloween. Yes, when all the spooks get to come out and look perfectly normal. Nobody's going to fuss at them because they're going to fit right into the environment. Halloween has always been one of my favorite holidays, and my guest today enjoys it just as much as I do. And she wrote a book called The Book of the Bizarre, Freaky Facts and Strange Stories. Varla Ventura is my guest today. Hi, Varla.
Hi, Donna.
Now, you're in San Francisco.
Yes.
And you have a real passion for anything that's quirky, odd, unusual, freaky. And like me, you just think Halloween is a fabulous, fabulous holiday.
Absolutely.
How did it come to be your favorite holiday?
You know, it started at a very young age. My mom was very, very, a very big fan of Halloween. She was a very open, open person in terms of, the occult, the, sort of other world, the idea of other world spirits, and in general was just a big fan of the holiday, the dressing up. And so, you know, we spent every Halloween, we walked through the cemetery at midnight. You know, we always dressed up. We always went trick-or-treating. And I think I learned to very young not to be afraid of those things, but to really look forward to them. You know, we had a Ouija board when I was a kid instead of Monopoly, things like that.
Well, you're not the Addams Family. But no. Some people may think that, that's getting close.
But we were fans of the Addams Family.
Oh, aren't they wonderful?
Yeah.
I mean, wouldn't that give something, give you really something to talk about if you got bored?
Yeah, right.
It's just great. Let's talk about some of this material that you've gotten. Now, you've got everything documented in this book. You said it took you a year to get this all together.
It took me a year just to take all of the research that I had and really turn it into readable book form. I would say that the research itself, I mean, some of the things were things that I had known about before, and I just wanted to verify or do further research on. But a lot of the material, once I thought I'm going to make this into a book, and I think I was actually at a party sharing some bizarre and random fact, and someone said, "Have you ever thought about putting that all into a book?"
Mm-hmm.
And so I thought, "Oh, that's kind of a great idea." So I started kind of collecting things, and once I really had that, you know, bizarre mindset, I was able to. It's just amazing what you see, even in the daily news and the regular news. There's always some kind of weird story. And so I started collecting those things. I did a lot of reading. There's a real extensive bibliography. And then I also put out a call to family and friends to share stories of coincidence and specifically paranormal experiences.
Mm-hmm.
I really wanted to make sure that what I put in the book had, you know, had sort of a personal touch to it. And I knew several people that had had experiences that had shared them on and off with me over the years, knowing that I was interested in that subject. So I just sort of, you know, got all the facts down and wrote them into the book.
Well, you've got all kinds of interesting odds and ends. And the very first item in your book is about the magical skull of doom.
Oh, yeah.
So you've got to tell us about that one.
Well, that's a really, now it's probably gained a little bit of popularity in modern media because the Indiana Jones movie just came out.
Yes.
But the magical skull of doom is basically a life-sized crystal skull. It's the size of a human head. And just the very origins of it are very shrouded in mystery. It first turned up in the 1920s in an archaeological dig in the Mayan city of what's now Belize. Mm-hmm. And even the circumstances surrounding that, it's sort of mysterious. For one thing, the crystal that it's made of, that crystal doesn't exist in that part of the country. So it's actually from a crystal that is more from the California region.
Interesting.
So that came into play. So then, it was discovered in the 20s, and then one of the archaeologists who said, look what I discovered, there were rumors that he had planted it, that it wasn't actually discovered, that he had done it on purpose on his daughter's birthday. So the very origins of it are a mystery still. I mean, there's still not exact evidence. But repeatedly, people over the years have had very strange experiences with this skull. Everything from people just falling ill from seeing it, people actually being able to see in it, sort of scry in it like a crystal ball and see events from the future or see images. Other people have had just physical symptoms being around it, you know, just their heart races or their eye starts twitching. So it's hard to discount when there's repeated generations of people having this experience with it. Somebody even said that the skull gave off this perfume. It had this certain scent that would come around.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it's kind of this wonderful, I mean, mysterious object. And what my favorite part about it is that it's actually exquisitely crafted, and it was crafted in a way that when the light hits it, it refracts out and makes the eyes look like they glow. So that's probably that's just cool.
That is cool. Now, you have a piece of trivia in here I just came across, and I just love this. I made a note, said good choice. In Los Angeles in 1976, a woman legally married a 20-pound rock with 20 guest presents. Boy, she probably did it on Halloween. I mean, this is just, you have so many fun things in here. And when I was going through it, I mean, you've got information about the Tower of London, but I thought, let's talk about Natchez, Mississippi, King's Tavern,
King's
1700s.
Tavern. Yeah, that's actually I love that story. This is a tavern that has had numerous experiences. People have reported having a variety of experiences. It's a tavern in Natchez, Mississippi, and it goes back to the 1700s. And it's called King's Tavern because it belonged to a man named Richard King. And Richard was murdered by his wife, and his wife was jealous because he had a mistress. And it's interesting, one of the things I love about it is that people repeatedly see the same thing, and that's a woman standing in front of them with her hands on her hips, just chastising. And I always think like that, you know, this is this great kind of spirit. And so the wife, the mistress of Richard King, was murdered by his wife. And so there had been, you know, years and years of sightings of this ghost. And then in the 30s, they actually found a skeleton of a woman with a dagger in her chest.
Hmm.
So that kind of explains it. And the sightings hadn't stopped after that, but it was just interesting because people, I find that very interesting. I think that in most myths and even, you know, old wives' tales or old stories, there's so often an element of truth. And so here are these people for years and years saying, you know, I've seen a ghost here, I've seen a ghost here, and then they actually find the skeleton of a woman in the house. So I find that very affirming somehow.
Mm-hmm. Yes, and you talk about animal apparitions, and of course, my goodness, I've had experiences with that. I just think that when you have a pet, if they are wanting to hang around, they will. But you talk about after Rudolph Valentino's Great Dane Kabar was purported to haunt his former owner's gravesite, and there is a bloodstained rock in Port Tobacco, Maryland, known as Peddler's Rock. And there is a blue dog that guards his dead master's buried treasure. this would be fun stuff to read on Halloween Eve, you know, just to get you've just got so many fun stories in here, and there's information. You've got the Holy Grail in here. You've got the origins of a Ouija board, which is actually more of a modern-day development, but the process for developing goes way, way back. You talk about chickens in here and earliest doctors, chimpanzees. Touch on that for a bit.
I love that. I actually had a really fun time speaking with the people at the education department of our local zoo to kind of share things. And then once they knew I was working on this project, they started sending me things. And so chimpanzees, which are, what are they, one? They're one DNA, whatever, away from us, so mm-hmm. they're our nearest relative. Sorry, I'm not a scientist. they've been cited using medicine, using plants for medicine. There are certain plants that they would use the bark of for one thing, and then they would use they would chew the leaves for something else. And many of these plants have been found to have medicinal properties, something that eases a stomach ache or, you know, relieves pain. Mm-hmm. So it's not just that they're eating plants at random. They're actually using specific parts and harvesting them, pounding them, or chewing them up.
You have information in here I was totally unaware of, and that is here in the Puget Sound area, which is where I live, there is a creature called Caddy. It's bigger than the one that's been reported in Loch Ness, estimated to be at least 40 feet long. And there's another place between Vermont and Quebec that has its own sea monster. How did you find out about the one in Puget Sound? I mean, I live here. I've been here for years, and I've never heard of Caddy.
Yeah, you know, I was actually surprised with that one as well, because I've spent I lived in the Pacific Northwest for some years, and you know, I can't tell you exactly what book I read it in. It was either in a book, like a book about cryptozoology and sort of strange sightings, or it could have been from a more modern article. And I wondered, actually, because I did know that you were based up in there, I wondered if any of your listeners have ever heard of that or had any experience with that. After I turned the manuscript in, I started actually finding more and more instances of that. For example, up in Lake Superior, the natives to that area, you know, they've depicted on rock art this sort of very serpent-like creature. And, you know, there's been many, many shipwrecks in that part of in the Great Lakes area. And, you know, it used to be believed that this serpent of Lake Superior was responsible for those.
Fascinating stuff. Armageddon Bros. Now, this one really got me. I couldn't believe that anybody would actually believe in this. In 1999, the Times of London reported that the firm Triumph International Japan had invented a bra that let its wearer know of any incoming missiles. I just cracked up when I read that. I said, oh, come on, this can't be true. It was called the Armageddon Bra, and it was designed to take advantage of the doomsday prophecy craze that was going through Japan like fire, and it had a sensor on the strap and a control box. Unfortunately, it didn't work all that well under clothes. To be most effective, it had to be worn on the outside. Ladies, can you not imagine yourself wearing one of these exciting, yes, whatever. And no word on how many women took advantage of this spin on bust control. Oh, that really did it in. Now,
I'm pretty sure that had to be invented by a man, right?
Of course. Now, what I just love, have you ever seen the commercial on television where when the guy's trying to make a pass at a woman, all of these needles come out of her?
No.
Oh, I have. And when I read this, I said, no, the commercial's better.
Yeah.
I like this. Anyway, I couldn't pass that one. That is just absolutely. Now, you talk about Thomas Edison, and Thomas Edison was a man that was very much interested in the paranormal. So what are some of the facts that you discovered about Thomas?
Well, I know that when he's, you know, most well known for his experiments with electricity and such. And I found actually that there's a book out that is called the, forgive me for not quoting the exact name of it, but it's something along the line of The Diary and Sundry Observations of Thomas Alva Edison. And the book itself is a little hard to read. It was written some time ago, and you know, it's very, very thick and heady. But because he was, you know, experimenting with electricity and energy and all these different things, he actually experimented and tried to create a machine that could basically do what is now known modernly as the EVP, the electronic voice phenomenon,
mm-hmm.
that could detect energy. And I did not know that about him. That was one of the things I just somehow in, you know, the history books, it just never came up. And I think I was having a conversation with someone and they mentioned that. And then I did some research and found this book to, you know, sort of verify and get some more of the details about it. But he was quite interested in the paranormal and in the afterlife.
Another one that I really liked, and I know in the modern world this would not work at all, you had it titled Bad News for Chocoholics. In villages in Central America during the 18th century, chocolate was believed to be the drink of the devil, and no one under 60 years of age was allowed to imbibe under threat of excommunication from the Catholic Church. I bet you a lot of people cheated on that one.
Can you imagine?
No, I can't. But, I, you know, there's a lot of other nonsensical stuff that has gone through the years of people. Obviously, it wouldn't survive in today's world, not with the business. I mean, that is the elixir of elixirs in today's world. What a riot. You would have been, oh, jeez. Okay. Now, you bring up some interesting material about a Voynich manuscript. This is something I'd never heard anything about, and they don't even really know the age of it, but it is at a Jesuit college in Frascati, Italy, and it was acquired in 1912. That is amazing to me. And there's a language and a script that's yet to be deciphered.
I know.
It's 35,000 words. And there's also images that have drawings of unknown botanical and pharmaceutical specimens and astronomical diagrams. Boy, wouldn't the UFOers have a good time with that one?
Yeah. Well, and the other interesting thing is that no one knows for sure who wrote this, but it's has been attributed to John Dee and his companion Edward Kelly, and they were known for doing a lot of channeling experiments where they would do a ritual, and I think Dee would be the conduit, and then Kelly would be the scribe, and he would write all of these things down, and they actually developed a whole language and a sort of a whole dictionary of what's called Enochian words and magic, and those were believed to be transcribed from angelic beings. So they were around the same time, but this one, I mean, they haven't been able to determine who actually wrote this Voynich manuscript or what any of these texts or glyphs mean. It's sort of like that, you know, the Great Mayan, cracking the Great Mayan code.
Well, we've got to get on to some real good stuff because Halloween is coming up.
Yeah.
Weenie Todd. Good stuff. This is a creepy crawler, if ever I read about one. This guy lived it's in legends in the 19th century. And you don't think that this is a fictitious character. You think that this person actually existed.
Yeah.
And there's a scholar, Peter Haining, that really, really says this person was alive and did commit crimes during the 1800s. So what's the legend here? It's crazy, believe me.
Well, the legend is that Sweeney Todd was a barber, and he lived in London. I think it was in the late 1800s or the early 1800s.
Mm-hmm.
And he was a barber, so he had a lot of very, you know, high-end clientele. People would come into his shop, and they'd ask for a shave and a haircut. And, you know, back then they used those big, vicious straight razors.
Oh, yes.
So he would get, you know, wealthy clientele to come in, and then he would get them in the chair, and then he would be behind them. He would cut their throats, or he would, you know, stab them. And then, you know, as the legend goes, there was actually a, he built an elaborate sort of trap door so that when he was done killing, he could just sort of drop these bodies through the trap door and they would go down to the basement. And then he would transport them around the corner to this woman's pie shop, which this woman was his lover. And she actually made meat pies, and they would grind up the bodies and use the bodies in the pies, and then anything that couldn't be, you know, actually ground up was thrown into the incinerator. And so that's sort of like the whole, you know, the whole legend.
The whole grisly legend, yes.
Yes, and then he was, you know, eventually he was caught because the smell was so overpowering. And people had reported for years, you know, there's a strange smell here, strange smell there. But this was London in the early 1800s, and I think that, you know, foul smells were abundant.
Yes, very
but
much so.
I think that's the only way that, you know, for that long he could have gotten away with it. And people have said that it's just a legend, it's a story, but there are definitely specific things that match up with murders of the time. And the other thing is that he had, you know, wealthier clientele, but I think overall it was in a poor
mm-hmm.
section.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, murders didn't necessarily get reported or followed up on, you know, as they would have if it was, you know, a member of a prestigious family. So
right.
He would pick people, maybe, you know, wayfarers that were in town with money, but that weren't necessarily going to be noticed if they went missing. And certainly people weren't going to say, oh yeah, he went for a shave over on, you know, over at Todd's shop. So, and I don't know if you saw the movie. I was really excited that there was the movie was coming out. It was, you know, after I had sent the manuscript in, and, you know, it was a musical, so it was different. It was very elaborate, but, you know, it stuck pretty true to all the legends that I had heard and all the different versions I had heard. So that was, it was good.
Well, I mean, that is grisly. So that is really,
it's grisly.
You know,
it's
it
brutal.
Is grisly. Well, we're going to switch to another one that you've got in here because I loved this one. Destined to Love. John and Martha O'Brien. And they told a story to Phil Cousineau for his book Coincidence or Destiny. And this is the kind of story that any romantic is absolutely going to love. And it's about 1989. There was a young woman, Martha Fletcher. She was a dancer from San Francisco. She met a John O'Brien, an artist from Greenwich Village, on a houseboat that was on the Seine near the Pont d'Amont in the front of the Eiffel Tower. And they really got along, and then they went to their respective homes. What happened after that?
Let's see. Yeah, it's a really beautiful story. It was hard to actually pick just one out of his book because he had so many beautiful stories. So let's see. So they met on this houseboat, and then they returned back to their homes. And she lived in San Francisco. He lived in Greenwich Village. And then several months later, Martha moved into a house. And she realized that she had a photograph that she had kept on her bulletin board. And that photograph showed a houseboat on the Seine, and the Eiffel Tower was in the background. And this is the same houseboat. It wasn't the same houseboat, but it was, you know, they had met on a houseboat on the Seine with the Eiffel Tower in the background. So then a few months later, the man that she had met on that houseboat moved to San Francisco. And with him, he brought a painting. I get chills when I think about this story. He brought a painting that he had painted 10 years before that. And the painting was of a ballerina with long red hair. And it looked just like Martha. So then the following summer, they decided that they would go to Paris, and John was painting and Martha was dancing. And they spent a day in this little village outside of Paris, and they parted again at the end of the summer. They had a lovely summer in Paris, and then they parted again, and John went back to New York and then was going to move out to California. So then he's packing up his things, and he finds an old photograph, and it's of this little town, Moret-sur-Loing, which was where they had just spent their summer. So a year after that, they were married, and a year after that, Martha finds an old journal, and in this old journal, she wrote, "I wish I could be Michelle O'Brien," who was a ballet dancer that she admired. And O'Brien is the last name of John. So then 2 months later, she had a baby, and she named her Michelle O'Brien.
Oh, I love love stories like that.
That
it's
is just
really
lovely.
So neat. That is so, so neat. Now, you said that there was, well, and just after that story, there is something called the warning that you wrote about.
Mm-hmm.
Tell us about that.
Well, I think this is a really cool story. It's definitely something that I think people have probably experienced. I think a lot of people have experienced something like this, and it leads into one of my favorite stories, which is the story of John Wilkes Booth. But the warning is the story of this this woman who was supposed to go to a reunion of her sorority sisters, and they were all going to stay at someone's home in Santa Rosa in California, and they had arranged it. Everybody was coming from all over the country, and just before she was going to arrive, she received a phone call, and it was that from this friend of hers, Barbara, who was also supposed to come to the reunion. And Barbara said, "You know, I'm packed. I'm ready to go. I have my ticket, but I just don't think I can go." And apparently her son had called her and begged her not to go. He had had a dream that there was a fatal accident, and it was at the reunion, and he just begged her not to go. And she said that alone wouldn't have done enough for her to completely change her plans, but her son had actually had a similar dream 3 years before that his father was going to die suddenly. And 5 days later, his father did die suddenly. So the mom, you know, Barbara, she had kind of put these two things together, and she just couldn't quite bring herself to go. So they go on with their plans. Barbara stays home, and they have this, you know, their first day is fantastic, and they're going to vineyards, and they're going on this horse-drawn carriage ride. And the second day, the plan was to go on this, like, big fancy ride all through the wine country. And as they were, as the carriage driver was hoisting himself up into the driver's seat, the two horses took that as a signal to go, and they lurched forward, and the driver was to the ground. The woman who, you know, had told me this story said that she pulled a large lever, and she thought it was the brake, but she couldn't slow this wagon down that they were in. And so they're in this, like, mad carriage ride, and they're driving along, and, you know, it's full bore, and it's supposed to be this lovely event, and everybody's terrified, and they're racing out of control, and they're about to go into the freeway. So the horses turn right before they go onto the freeway, and one of them goes right into telephone poles. The pole goes between the two horses, smashes the carriage, and everyone is violently flung out of the carriage. And, you know, so there was this, so then the woman said, you know, she was all right, and everybody was pretty injured, but all she could keep thinking was, what if Barbara had been with us? What would have happened?
Vala Ventura, her book, The Book of the Bizarre, Freaky Facts and Strange Stories. We'll share just a few of them with you. Vala, do you have a website people can go to?
I have, you know, there's some information about the book on the publisher's website, which is wiserbooks.com.
Okay,
and
that's great.
W-E-I-S-E-R,
mm-hmm.
Books. But you know what, I don't have a website myself, but I am working on a second book, and I welcome feedback from or crazy stories or freaky stories or paranormal experiences from readers and listeners. And I can give that email address out.
Oh, that would be fine. What is that email?
It's varlaventura@gmail.com, and that's varlaventura@gmail.
Varla, it's been a delight having
you as a guest.
Thank you
so much for having me, Donna. I really appreciate it.
Yes. This is Donna Sebo. We are taking a break. Don't forget the Book of the Bizarre, Freaky Facts and Strange Stories. Perfect for Halloween or any time you really want to have a spooky experience. This is Donna Sebo. We're taking a break. Don't go away. We're going to be right back.
Do you want to lose weight? Do you deal with diabetes, high blood pressure, osteoporosis, or chronic pain? Do you want to know one of Dr. Perricone's 7 secrets to beauty, health, and longevity? Do you have 15 minutes a day to look and feel better? Then let me introduce you to TTAP, the workout that works. For the beginner or expert exerciser, learn from physical training specialist Teresa Tapp how, in just 15 minutes a day, you can burn fat and sugar, build strong bones and muscles, and lose inches fast with no equipment or jumping. Visit the TTAP website, TTAP.com, or call 1-800-342-0717 to learn how. That's TTAPP.com. We'll help you lose inches, look good, and feel fabulous at TTAP. 1-800-342-0717, TTAP.com.
Are you concerned about nutrition? Do you work hard to eat right, try to feed yourself and your family nutritious food? Well, you'll want to know about glyconutrients. What are they? These are sugars that are present in nature, however, we're not getting them in our food anymore. Scientific study is proving that these sugars are necessary for all cellular and immune system function. Over 20,000 studies are conducted each year on glycoforms alone. These are the sugar protein structure that line each and every cell of the body. 4 out of the last 8 Nobel Prizes in physiology have been awarded for research in the area of cellular communication and how these sugars work in the body. This is Donna Sebo. Every day I bring to you information that will empower and light up your life. I would like to invite you to visit my website, DelphiInternational.com, and find out more about these glyconutrients. That's DelphiInternational.com. Go to my website, go to the left side of the screen, tap on the button that says glyconutrients. MIT's Technology Review, February 2003, states that glycomics is one of the 10 emerging technologies that will change the world. Education is the key to advancement of understanding and making our lives better. Visit my site, DelphiInternational.com. Go to the left side of the screen and tap on the button that says glyconutrients. I know it'll make a difference for you, as it has for me.
Hi, this is Donna Sebo, and telephone lines are now open. If you'd like to give me a buzz and let me light up your life with a little bit of intuitive insight, just know I'm here to do it for you, and it is a pleasure to do so. Remember, I'm an information resource. All I need from you is your first name or your initial. After that, let me tell you what I perceive, and then you're welcome to ask me a question about anything that is of interest to you. 877-876-5227, that's 877-876-5227, or 888-815-9756, that's 888-815-9756. Also, we have a direct line of 530-876-3222. All of those numbers are available to you, so give me a buzz if you want to chat. Time. Oh, my goodness, it is going to be changing this coming weekend. Yes, all the clocks are going to be going back an hour, except in those locations where they don't do it at all, which, you know, I don't think is such a bad idea. But we're in the habit of doing this, so it just seems like it's something that we just have gotten so accustomed to, even though it was done initially to give farmers more daylight to work with. So let's take a look at how time has changed. You know, years and years and years ago, about, well, let's say 3,500 through 1,500 B.C., the earliest clocks that were used was, well, that was the sun, right? The sun's movement across the sky. They had water dripping from certain vessels, candles burning down through marked increments. That was a way of marking time. Well, as we know, that was not always the best, but it was accurate enough for them to be able to schedule certain ceremonies recognizing what time and seasons of the years were evolving. Then we ended up going to mechanical clocks. They evolved from the 1200s through the 1920s. And balance wheels were involved, weights, pendulums. Now, it would not keep exact time. If ever you've had a clock, you've had to wind, and you have to be very, very thoughtful about it. If you wound it too tight, maybe it would go too fast or it would go too slow. So you could have an error with your clock anywhere from 2 hours a day in the 1200s to 1 second per year by 1921. Now, this was really used by the military a great deal. And it also enabled us to standardize transportation. 1920s through today, quartz clocks are the mechanism of choice. They're electrically induced vibrations of quartz crystal. Error on it? Well, it can be as much as 10 seconds per day if you have a really, really cheap watch to 0.3 seconds per year. They are so accurate that they measure variations in the rotation rate of the Earth. And something that's just amazing when you think of it, the optical atomic clocks. I know I've got a person on the line and I'll be getting to you right away. I love atomic clocks. They are so neat. We had power go out here in the Pacific Northwest today. And so my atomic clock works just fine. It's just absolutely marvelous, but I have to set all the other clocks that are electrical. Well, the mechanism is an ultraviolet resonance of atoms. And the error level of an atomic clock is less than 1 second in 1 billion years. Ah, so when they designed this, it was accurate enough to improve space navigation. Donna Siebel here. We're going to go to our first caller of the day. And remember, you can call in, too. This is how it's done. Caller, welcome to the show. First name or initial, and where are you calling from?
Hello.
Hi, dear.
Hi.
First name or initial, and where are you calling from?
L.A.
And first name or initial?
Emmy.
Okay, Emmy, have you got the volume on your computer turned up? Is that what you're listening to?
No, I'm listening over the phone.
Oh, good. Okay, because I was wondering if there was a time delay here. Okay, Emmy, the first thing I'm looking at with you is stop procrastinating. There are some things that must be taken care of sooner rather than later. There is what I'd call effective correspondence that you need to follow through with. Also, I think that there are some financial issues that you're going to be looking at because you want to be sure that you're not going to have any surprises. So don't wait. Don't dally on any of these areas of interest that you have where you need to get information to be sure that you have all the details you need to make good judgments. Don't wait. Do what you need to do as soon as possible. Also, you're highly intuitive, and for some reason, you don't pay attention to it. I don't know why. Yet, you know when you get the mind impressions or the gut feelings, you're so sensitive to it that sometimes I think you just want to push it away. And I want to say don't do that, because you actually are quite accurate. And if you listen to your intuitive processes and follow the rhythm of those intuitive processes, you're going to find you're going to be in the right place at the right time, talking to the right people, doing the right things, and that flow is going to go on in all levels of your life. I'm also looking at something bothering the throat, and I'm wondering if you are very sensitive to a certain food. And the reason I see this, it's like my throat is closing up on me. So if maybe you have too much sugar, or if you have too much of a certain spice, the throat starts doing funny things. Pay attention. It's your body's barometer letting you know that you're having too much of something. And if you cut back, it goes away. Really
Perfect.
Goes away. And also this grief inside of you that surges up every once in a while. You need to be able to let that grief go because it doesn't have any place in your life. Where you are right now, be present with it, because you've got some wonderful changes coming. What's on your mind, dear? What would you like to ask me?
It looks like I'm having some changes coming up in my life work-wise.
What was your question to me?
Am I going to be staying where I'm at, or am I going to be moving on?
Well, the choice is actually yours, believe it or not. You could stay right where you are, whatever you're doing, and you could stay there easily for another 2 or 3 years, no problem at all. If you want to make a change right now, I would like for you to think it through very carefully, because I'd much rather like to see you. I'd much rather see you make a change because you know exactly where you want to put yourself, and you will have taken the time to invest in any kind of learning curve that's going to make you more marketable for what you wanted to do. Does that make sense to you?
Yeah, it does.
Okay.
Makes a lot of sense.
Oh, well, good. Then let's say you decided you wanted to become a baker, the best baker in the world of Napoleon's. That's wonderful. So maybe you have to take a chef's class. You know, you might make them at home and they're okay, but if you're going to do something in a restaurant and be a number one baker, then you better go to the culinary class, right?
Right.
That's what I think you should do. Of course, you're an adult. You can make your own choices, but I think you'll find that if you're patient and you really invest in yourself, especially in whatever excess training you may need, above and beyond what you already have, I believe you're going to find yourself in a winning situation.
Wonderful.
Well, Emmy, I'm so glad you called in. How'd you learn about the show?
From the BBS.
Wonderful. Thank you for calling in, and be sure and tell your friends about it.
I certainly will, and thank you so much. I really appreciate your help.
Oh, you're more than welcome, Emmy. Have a wonderful day, and a wonderful Halloween.
Thank you. You too.
Bye-bye. This is
Bye-bye.
Donna Sebo, and you can call in just like Emmy and chat with me. Here are the telephone numbers. You can call in to 877-876-5227. Canadians, 888-815-9756 and 530-876-3222. Any and all of those numbers are open right now, so give me a buzz, and I'd be delighted to light up your life with a little bit of insight. Now, tomorrow we're going to be talking about energetic evolution in healing. Cynthia O'Neill is going to be my guest. And then on Friday, we're going to have an open mic day, and I'm going to have a special guest. So we've got some fun things that are going to be going on Friday. So that'll be an entirely open mic. I will not have a guest that day. But anyway, we've got some fun stuff to chat about this week. And so just know that tell your friends, and they can call in and do the same thing as we're doing right now. By the way, I wanted to share with those of you that maybe collect photos or you have antique jewelry or maybe there's heirloom quilts. And I guess I'm talking more to the gals right now. If you have really nice antique jewelry, if you want to keep it looking like new, there's a very simple storage secret that you can use, and it's chalk. Why does this work? Now, I don't know about you, but I love costume jewelry. And many times, costume jewelry will get a tarnish on it, and you can't treat it like you can real metal like gold or silver. You just can't clean it that way. It's just not going to work. It'll ruin it, because often the type of metal combinations that they use will deteriorate with a normal cleaning process. Now, metal will tarnish, obviously, when it's exposed to air for a long time. We all know about silver and what can happen. But again, if you have costume jewelry, you want to be very thoughtful here. So there is a woman by the name of Gail Wood, and she said, if you want to make sure that your fine metal jewelry does not lose its luster, put it in baggies and add a piece of chalk. Now, when I read this, it brought to mind a story about a friend of mine who was a professional jeweler. And she has, for years, gone to estate sales, and she would invest in collections, you know, just whatever might be up for sale on the estate. And she got some marvelous, marvelous things. Well, there was a very special experience she had. I know we're going to be taking a break here in just a moment. When I come back, I'll chat with you, and also I'll tell you what my friend Nancy learned when she bought a special something at an estate sale. Amazing story. We'll be back in just a moment. This is Donna Siebel. Give me a buzz if you want to chat. 877-876-5227 or 888-815-9756.
If you're searching for the perfect gift for a child, consider God's Kiss by Donna Sebo. That's right. Donna is not only a mental practitioner and psychic, she's an author as well. God's Kiss beckons all children and the young at heart to enter the dream world of a little traveler named Johnny. You can order your book today by sending a check or money order to Mrs. Sebo's Classics, Post Office Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497. That's Post Office Box 97272. Tacoma, Washington, 98497. If you'd like both the book and cassette, you pay $19.95 plus applicable tax and shipping charges. This is the book for your favorite child of any age. Donna Sebo's God's Kiss is about a child's sense of place in the world, and it's destined to be a children's classic. Order now. Call 800-872-8852. God's Kiss is written by Donna Sebo and illustrated by Ed Ged Rose. Buy it today. 800-872-8852.
Do you have a group, organization, or club that would like to have an interesting and dynamic speaker? Then you're going to want to have Donna speak to your group. She motivates audiences towards personal empowerment, giving them tools for their personal and professional success. If you would like Donna Sebo to bring a presentation to your next event, call Delphi International at 253-582-5604. That's 253-582-5604.
Hi, this is Donna Sebo. I was going to continue. Now, don't forget, you give me a buzz if you want to chat. 877-876-5227 or 888-815-9756. Also, we have a direct line of 530-876-3222. My friend Nancy, as I mentioned before we went on break, she was very much involved with estate sales. After attending one of them, a family came up to her. They had found out about what she did and said, you know, we have this estate. Our dad just died, and we really don't want any of the stuff that's in my dad's warehouse. So would you go and take a look at it and tell us if you're interested? So she went over, and they opened up the door, and inside this warehouse, she didn't really believe what they were telling her. But when she walked into this warehouse, she was astonished. There were 700 shoeboxes that were all lined up very neatly on shelves, and she just looked at them, and they said, yeah, we don't like any of this stuff. It was a collection of costume jewelry. Now, what is even more interesting is that when Nancy opened the boxes, she discovered that all of this jewelry was from the 1950s. Yeah, the 1950s. This man and his wife had been married for many, many years. When his wife died, they had been involved in the costume jewelry business and had made a very good living. But with her death, he just totally became disinterested in even touching any of the stuff. So he packed up their entire collection and put it in the warehouse and just locked it up. And it stayed locked up for years until Nancy was talked to by the family, and he had passed on, and they just didn't know what to do with it. They said, well, can you sell some of this, or what can we do? We just don't know. We don't want any of this stuff. It's so old. We just don't want it. So she offered to buy it from them. She bought the entire warehouse, and she said it was like being a kid in a candy shop going through 700 shoeboxes. Every single shoebox had more than one piece of chalk in it. The jewelry was like brand new. And when she told me this story, it was when I was assisting her when she decided to close her jewelry shop, and she was selling a great deal of this at her store. And I'm telling you, it was absolutely awesome stuff, but it looked brand new, not a tarnish on any of them, having sat in that warehouse so for well over 30-plus years. Just absolutely amazing. So the chalk really does work. Now, what if you've got photos? I came across this immediately. I thought of a particular file cabinet where I've got all kinds of photos, and I haven't really organized them or done anything with them. I've just left them in this paper-like file environment I've got. And what I have found out, if I'm reading some material that came across my desk, is a shoebox is really the best place to keep photos, and you can set up a file system for it. It's better than keeping it in a photo album. Now, low-grade paper, acidic adhesives, and plastic dividers, the reason they're not so good to keep around your photographs, they give off peroxides and gases that can actually stain and destroy images. So if you keep the box in a cool, dry place, like a closet, and to guarantee, naturally, if you don't want to lose them forever, just scan them into your computer. And they're not. Scanners are not costly at all. So that's just a tip. Just store them in a shoebox and maybe set up a filing system, so by year or what have you, by person or whatever you want to do. And if you've got heirloom quilts, and I know that I have one from my grandmother. I got it from her when she was 91 years old. They said the best storage secret for quilts, for fine linens, well, your pillowcase. You don't need to buy an expensive storage box or a cedar chest. The best place for a delicate quilt is in a simple pillowcase. And a white pillowcase contains nothing in it that can hurt your quilt and protects it from light and dust. Just fold your quilt, tuck it inside, and store it on a shelf in a closet, air it out, and refold it a few times a year so it doesn't get permanently creased. These are all little tips that can help us. So many times we have things that we really love that we want to pass along to members of our family or maybe to someone very, very special. And these are just ways of storing things, and they're not costly at all. And if you've got lace or real fragile fabrics, roll them up. Don't fold them. Because what happens is as the fibers age, they'll break at the fold. So grab an empty wrapping paper roll, cover it with plastic wrap, and then roll the fabric carefully onto the tube, and then just cover the tube with an old clean sheet to protect it from dust, and just keep it in the closet. And it'll do just fine. Absolutely wonderful. So those are just a few tips for heirlooms. Oh, I've got to share something with you. Halloween's coming up, and you know you want to have something fun, wild, and wacky to serve. Well, I have gotten a whole bunch of stuff for Halloween especially, and there's a monster munchie mix that I wanted to share with you. If you're going to be having a party, I know a friend of mine, she said, I want you to bring something, and I'm thinking of actually doing this because this is so much fun, and it's just going to be really, really neat to be able to share it with all the people we're going to be interacting with on Halloween. So what you're going to need is for this monster munchie mix, you're going to need 4 cups of mix, square corn and rice cereal such as Chex. That's a 14-ounce package. You're going to need 1 cup of pretzel sticks, 1/4 cup of butter, 2 teaspoons of Worcestershire sauce, 1 teaspoon of garlic powder. You want 2 cups of assorted baked cheese crackers, you know, whatever you like, hot spice or whatever you got. You need 1 cup of M&Ms, 3/4 cup of candy corn, 1/2 cup of yogurt-covered raisins, 1/2 cup of chocolate-covered peanuts, and then you want some pumpkin candies or whatever you got. Figure out what you like, and you can have gummy bats and tarantulas. Wouldn't that be cool all in a bowl? Oh, I can't think of anything more exciting than licorice tarantulas right there. Blah. Anyway, this is what you do. Combine, well, you first want to preheat your oven, 300 degrees. You line your baking sheet with foil, and in a bowl you want to put your cereal and your pretzels. Now, in a small microwave-safe bowl, you want to put your butter in a 15-second interval until it melts. You then want to stir in the Worcestershire and the garlic powder, microwave it until the garlic powder is dissolved, and then you pour it over the entire cereal mixture. Toss it well, spread the mixture on a jelly roll pan, bake it until it's crisp and, ooh, smells yummy, about 10 minutes. Stir it halfway through the baking time, and then stir in your crackers, let it cool completely, and put it in a serving bowl. Add those licorice tarantulas and gummy bats, and you have got a monster munchy mix. Good stuff. Kids will love it. Adult kids especially, they really like this kind of stuff. Halloween is fun. There's so many wonderful things, and I've got a creepy crawler pizza that I can share with you tomorrow. Whatever works. Chocolate-covered ants. I mean, there's all kinds of good things. People are so imaginative. I just love it. This is Donna Sebo. Remember, always, you're the master of your fate. You the captain of your soul. We'll be chatting with you tomorrow right here on bbsradio.com. Same time, same place. Donna Sebo here. Have a fabulous evening. Bye for now.
You have been listening to The Donna Sebo Show. If you would like a copy of today's broadcast, send $10 to The Donna Sebo Show, P.O. Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497-0272. Be sure to put the date of the broadcast in your request. If you are not able to be a part of today's program, join Donna and her guests Monday through Friday, and she will be here to take your calls. Thank you for listening and being part of our program. Have a wonderful day.